Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I just had to jog in place to try to warm up. It's a freezer in here. So great to have Taz talk about SummerSlam as our lead-in on this Sunday night. Going into a Monday morning, but holy cow, it's cold in here. I was doing the over-under out in the newsroom on what the temperature would be when I came in here, because normally it's Scott Farrell who is in the studio before me during the week, and he is kind enough to turn off the air condition when he leaves. So at least the air condition isn't blaring when I come in. He knows exactly how I like the studio temperature. Taz doesn't do very many Sunday evening shows, and so I set the line at 67. It was over, but only by a degree. Oh my gosh, it's cold in here, but it's okay. If my teeth are chattering, just ignore me. It'll be part of the ambiance as we start another work week. Yay! It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio. An exciting weekend in Major League Baseball. And I'll tell you what, I enjoyed baseball so much on Friday that I actually didn't do my typical no sports Friday. It's actually, it's kind of a rule in my house. Unless there's something that I want to watch myself, outside of October, obviously. October and the month of May, usually I have to break that rule because of everything that's going on in postseason. But typically on Fridays, I do not watch sports. I might follow the storylines, but I don't sit and watch the games. Well, this Friday night was so much fun that I actually watched a variety of baseball games and then listened to a couple of others on satellite radio. And that really carried through all weekend. It was a fantastic weekend of drama on the diamond. And so we're going to get into all the storylines from the Yankees and Astros, who now have identical records atop the American League, to the Dodgers surge back in front with the best record overall in baseball, to the Indians Twins series this weekend, in which Cleveland takes 3 of 4 from Minnesota and is now tied for that AL Central division lead. Just as a reminder, the Twins led this division by 11.5 games the first week in June. And then I got to tell you, my favorite of the weekend was the Mets. Talk about coming back from the dead when you have barely a pulse. The New York Mets were the second worst team in baseball. No, excuse me, in the National League. Can't forget about the Orioles. They were the second worst team in the National League because you are what your record says you are. And a month ago, their record said they were the second worst team on the senior circuit. And now they are just breathing down the necks of the other wild card contenders. You know, they just had a series with the Nationals over the weekend, and the Braves are coming up next. But the way they've done it has been captivating. And so I did more tweeting about the Mets this weekend than I think I've done since they were last in the World Series. But I actually enjoyed the games a lot. They were so dramatic, and that's the kind of stuff that floats my boat. Sports are crazy. So thanks for tuning in. We're inside the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans studio. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Did I already say that? We're only 6 minutes into the show, and I can't remember what I've said in the last 6 minutes. You can find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio, and then also on our Facebook page, After Hours with Amy Lawrence. We'll, of course, have Man Crush Monday for you. And again, there's a lot to talk about because we've got the baseball. But also this weekend, Simone Biles with some incredible history. She won her 6th USA all-around title at the national championships. But that's not even the history part. I mean, that's incredible. But if you weren't watching social media or watching the coverage on NBC's Family of Networks, she is amazing. And her giant smiles when she competes and when she nails these dismounts or jumps in competition that have never been done before. That's my favorite part. Right in the middle of a serious moment, she cracks this gigantic grin, all the tension just getting released. And of course, with everything that she's gone through and her tenure with USA Gymnastics to now be competing and winning again, she is an inspiration. Serena Williams with another blip on the road as she tries to get back to the point at which she can win another Grand Slam, back to the point at which she is tops in the world. And maybe that point never comes, but she continues to compete. It's just, it's different when you're in your late 30s and when you've had a baby. Not that she would trade that, of course. And also the first weekend of the golf postseason, so the FedEx Cup playoffs. So we've got some other ancillary storylines. And then Antonio Brown, of course. Oh, my gosh. You guys, going back to Friday. Just, again, I normally don't spend this much time talking about, reading about, watching sports on Friday. It's my one day where it's a haven. But I had a bunch of cleaning to do, and so I was taking the baseball games around the house with me while I was cleaning. But the Antonio Brown news broke in the afternoon, and I spent a good hour on my laptop reading, tweeting, just shaking my head. If you guys had seen me at my desk in my office at home, just shaking my head. And at one point, the only thing I could come up with was, are you kidding me, Antonio Brown? Are you kidding me? No, there are many other things that we could call you, and that is not one of them. Are you kidding me? And so this is my first opportunity to talk about the latest developments with AB and the Raiders here on the show. We're waiting to hear from the NFL. Honestly, I can't even believe the NFL gave the guy a hearing. Maybe it was just to pacify him. But I swear, if the league caves on this helmet issue, I will light them up. Oh, I'm waiting with bated breath to find out what happens. I can't imagine the league is going to cave on this, but you know what? The NFL has done some unexplainable things in the past and made some inexplicable and ridiculous decisions. These decisions I thought were ridiculous. And so I know better than to assume anything about the NFL. You know what happens when you assume, or when I assume. And so we'll wait to hear from the NFL. But in the meantime, I know many of you want to talk about it. Because in response to my tweeting firestorm on Friday afternoon, I got many of your comments and your reactions. It dawned on me at one point when I was reading, and if you haven't gone back and seen Michael Silver's comments, he really had some insight. It's not just the frozen feet, which are no longer happy feet. It's not just the protest over the helmet. There's other details from Michael Silver about this early tenure with the Raiders that are so indicative of exactly what the Raiders got when they got Antonio Brown. And you know what? I envisioned the Steelers front office working together. I don't know if they were together. Maybe they were out on the field. Maybe they were done for the day. Oh, actually, there was a preseason game for the Steelers, right, on Friday, if I remember correctly. So maybe they were prepping, warm-ups, whatever it was. And I can only imagine what their reaction was when all of this Antonio Brown news broke. the most recent being his helmet protest. So we'll get into all the details, but I just imagine the gales of laughter. Because I laughed myself. I mean, I was disgusted, but some of the reaction on social media was priceless. And so we'll get into some of the details. I want to hear from you. But for sure, you can find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio. 855-212-4227. That's our toll-free line. 855-212-4CBS. John Gruden not waiting for the next edition, the next episode of Hard Knocks to share his feelings and his defense of his erstwhile wide receiver, who, by the way, is still not practicing.
You know, there's been a lot of reports out there. I can't say I agree with all of them, certainly. But I support this guy. You know, I think that's what needs to be said. I don't know what anybody's writing or what anybody thinks, but this foot injury wasn't his fault. You know, this was a total accident. It really wasn't his fault. And it's a serious injury. I know some people are smarting at it, but it's really not a laughing matter. The guy was hurt. He was innocent. He didn't do anything wrong. And the helmet thing is a personal matter to him. You know, he has a strong feeling about what he's worn on his head, and we're supporting him. We understand the league's position as well, so we're in a tough spot. And we hope Antonio is back here soon because he's exciting to be around. I'm excited. I got some plays for him. I hope we can start calling him.
Okay, number one, I do appreciate that John Gruden is sticking up for his guy. You don't hear him very often that even keel. Usually there's a lot of exclamation points in what he has to say. Usually he's very fiery. You can tell that he's taking this really seriously. But I do like how he says, there's been a lot of reports out there. I'm not sure I agree with all of them. I mean, you can agree or disagree with opinions. You can't agree or disagree with truth, with facts. So is he saying that they are erroneous reports? And he says, I'm not sure I agree with all of them. And then the part about how AB has strong feelings about what he puts on his head. Okay, it's just the way he says it. Oh, and the fact that the cryotherapy freezer burn was not his fault. So does that mean that they're going to sue this place in France where he went into the cryo chamber because they didn't tell him what footwear to put on? I mean, if that's the case, make that public so other people don't use that same facility in that same chamber. If this was not Antonio Brown's fault, if it was the fault of the people who were putting him in the chamber in France, if this truly was their negligence, then it should be their liability as well. I haven't heard anything about that. And so there's a lot of meat there with John Gruden. But honestly, you don't hear him that calm very often. No doubt this is causing major consternation. If you believe the reports, now we know that Antonio Brown is extremely melodramatic. In fact, he's the boy that cries wolf a lot. And now he's doing it with a new team. And so he's got a little more leeway. If this was with the Steelers, it wouldn't work anymore. But now it's with the Raiders. And so they want his services badly. They're willing to put up with a little more. But it's already started. He's barely practiced with them, and it's already started. I just wonder if they could put Wonder Woman's lasso around them, Mike Mayock and John Gruden, maybe Derek Carr, although he's not the one who made the move or the one who's paying the bills, but would there already be an admission of buyer's remorse? So far, no good. All right, you can find me on Twitter or on Facebook. I want to hear your reaction. Again, this is really the first time that I've had the chance to talk to you about Antonio Brown and the latest developments with the Raiders. And so I definitely want to hear from you, but you can also find us on Twitter. We'll put a spot up on Facebook where you can weigh in. Straight ahead, we'll do a little bit of Major League Baseball. We're going to get set up for our visit to Los Angeles. I feel like we went to Los Angeles last week, too. We did. It's kind of fun. We talked to Patrick Claibon. That's right. He was at NFL Network in L.A. on Thursday night show. So consecutive visits to L.A., which is cool. Michael Duarte of NBC L.A. will join us. We'll talk Rams. We'll talk Chargers. We'll talk Dodgers. So there's a lot to get to on this edition of the show. Thanks so much for tuning in. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
The pitch. Swung on, hit high, hit deep to left center. This ball, gone, a grand slam. Carlos Santana with a grand slam to left center. And the Indians are back on top, 7-3 here in the 10th inning.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Tom Hamilton on the Cleveland Indians radio network. That was the grand slam that allowed the Indians to take 3 of 4 against what were the division-leading Twins in the AL Central. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. So before we get to the logistics of this one on Sunday, going back to June 4th, the Indians have the best record in the majors. Okay, so you're talking about now, we'll call it a 9-week sample size, going into 10 weeks now. So just over 2 months, back to June 4th. The Indians have the best record in Major League Baseball at 42-17. And I told you this as we went into the weekend. So this is one of the storylines I was following the last few days. The Twins led the AL Central by 11.5 games on June 3rd. So first week of June, the Indians in a humongous hole. Twins have that division with a double-figure lead and no contenders in sight. And then the Indians start this maniacal run. So now 42-17 going back to June 4th, which is the best record in the majors. And they are tied atop the division for the second time in 3 days because they did tie them on Friday night as well. Lost on Saturday, so fell back by a game. And now at the conclusion of the weekend series, it's actually a 4-game series, they're back into a tie. Both teams 71-47. It's going to be a pretty cool race the rest of the way in the regular season. So the Carlos Santana grand slam was in the 10th inning. The Indians had a 3-1 lead going into the bottom of the ninth. And it sure looked like the Twins were going to walk off. Marwin Gonzalez with a huge hit has one run cross the plate. But it's the defense, it's the arms that sends it into extra innings.
And here's the pitch, a swing and a line drive. Left field and deep. Naquin going back. It's over his head. He went up off the wall. Hines will score. Adrianza is heading home. Lindor's throw is caught. And Plawecki tags out Adrianza. Gonzalez with an RBI double to tie the game at 3.
It was a pair of pinpoint throws, relay throws from a ball that bounced off the wall. And you hear the call there with Corey Provis on the Twins radio network. So if not for those two relay throws, including the last one by Lindor, who gets the runner at the plate, and probably by 2 steps. It was quick, it was precise, and it was a pretty aggressive send by the third base coach, I'll give you that. But the Twins were attempting to end the game right there. Instead, they're tied 3-3, they go into the 10th, and then Carlos Santana hits the grand slam. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. It was certainly a series that caused Terry Francona to sweat. Remember, he told us on Thursday he was having a hard time breathing. I mean, that's the beauty of this time of the year when you have close division races or wild card races, which is also the case. So that's the closest division race, closer than you can get. Indians, Twins, but in the NL Central, what is it about these Central divisions? We have just a 2-game separation between Cubs and Cardinals, longtime rivals. Brewers only a half game back. In the NL East, it's a little closer maybe than the Braves would like it to be. They had built a nice cushion. Nationals and Mets are creeping. But to even talk about the Mets in any way at all related to a playoff spot now, that part is really amazing. So give credit to the Nationals because they were able to protect a lead on Sunday. They hadn't done that either Friday or Saturday. But they finally got to the Mets bullpen on Sunday. So we'll get to the Friday-Saturday drama. But for Washington, Sunday had to be a huge relief.
Here's the pitch. Swinging a fly ball down the right field line. Chasing this one, McNeil. He can't get it. It is fair. This one headed to the corner and may clear the bases. Eaton scores. Rendon scores. Soto's hurt rounding third. And they've got him hung up. They'll throw across and he's tagged out. And on a big hit for Asdrubal Cabrera, Juan Soto's hurt rounding third.
So that's the call on the Nationals radio network. It was Asdrubal Cabrera who hit a tie-breaking 2-run double. Remember, he used to be a Met. The Nationals bullpen was able to do the job that the Mets bullpen was not. And so the Nationals get that victory on Sunday, but the Mets win the series with the victories on Friday and Saturday, and they did both in comeback fashion. So it was an 8-game streak for New York. That's now ended, but they've still won 15 of 17. And so in the NL East, the Nationals are only back by 6.5 games. So definitely not beyond the realm of possibility. But it's the NL wildcard race that floats my boat. Nationals up by a half game on the Cardinals, then another half game back to the Brewers, the Mets a game out, the Phillies 2 games out, the Diamondbacks 3, the Giants 3.5. I mean, even the Reds, only 5 games out. And dear Lord, the Padres are only 6.5 games out. It's crazy. It's actually really weird. And every time I say it, I feel like I must be doing something wrong. I must be saying something wrong. Every time I mention the teams in the NL West who are in fact wild card contenders, even though the Diamondbacks are literally sitting on the Mendoza line right at 500. And the Giants are actually below 500. And they're 19 games out in their own division, but yet they are wild card contenders. And that's credit to the Dodgers. Another gem from Hyunjin Ryu on Sunday. And we'll spend some time at Chavez Ravine, where the Dodgers have played extremely well. Best home record in the majors, best overall record in the majors. The home runs, well, you know, I mean, you might be able to use one hand to count the number of games they haven't hit home runs in this year. Okay, maybe 2 hands. And so we'll talk about the Dodgers, also Los Angeles football. That's coming up next. Looking forward to hearing from you about Antonio Brown as well. So you can find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio, and also on our Facebook page. First show of the work week. We're off and running. It's mid-August. I don't know how we got here.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Leak on 2-2. And a fly ball to left center field. That's well hit. And that one is gone. Back-to-back home runs for the Dodgers in the first. Turner, his 18th. Bellinger, his 38th. Dodgers lead it now 3-0. 1-2. There's a fly ball. Deep left field. At the wall. LoCastro looks up, and it's gone. Turner's second home run of the day.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
The Los Angeles Dodgers continue to do what the Los Angeles Dodgers have been doing all season. Now 79-41. They've won 10 of their last 12. Hyunjin Ryu with his 12th win on Sunday, and he lowered his earned run average to 1.45. It was already the lowest in Major League Baseball. Charlie Steiner with calls of the home runs from both Bellinger, and then Justin Turner had a pair himself. Bombs away for the leaders in the NL West. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. We're pleased to welcome Michael Duarte from Southern California with NBC LA, who covers the Dodgers and also other sports in the area. And Michael, Cody Bellinger has his 38th home run, but honestly, I want to ask about the guy who hit his seventh on Sunday, which is the rookie Will Smith, behind the plate as well for Hyunjin Ryu. What has impressed you the most about this new player for the Dodgers?
Yeah, you're speaking, of course, of the Fresh Prince of Bel Air, or the Fresh Prince of LA, as we like to call him out at Chavez Ravine. I think, first of all, I don't know if you've had a chance to see an interview with him or a picture. He's a very baby-faced guy. He doesn't even look old enough, you know, to walk into a bar anywhere here in Los Angeles, but he has the maturity and poise of a 5-6 year veteran already. I think the best example of that is after he caught Clayton Kershaw for the first time, we asked Kershaw, you know, how many times did you have to shake this kid off? You know, obviously he's a rookie. He's only caught you, you know, one time in a rehab start in Oklahoma City. It must have happened. And he said, honestly, he's prepared. He knows everything we want to do. He knows the game plan. I shook him off once, maybe twice, and that's probably less than I would shake off a veteran. And a lot of the starting pitchers have said that. And as you see, Hyunjin Ryu doesn't even skip a beat. He's been doing what he's been doing all season, regardless of who's behind the plate. So that's been the biggest thing. It's just kind of the poise and maturity. Defensively, he's also opened eyes. That was also always thought of as maybe a weakness of Will Smith, but he's been able to throw out runners. He made a great play picking off a guy at second base in this Diamondbacks series that was very impressive, that changed the course of an inning that could have been a big inning for the Diamondbacks and ended up being nothing for them. And then, of course, you're seeing the offensive numbers. I think he has 3 walk-off home runs already, a grand slam. He's just putting up big numbers, and he's matching in a very short sample size what Austin Barnes, the starting catcher for the Dodgers, did over like 100 games. So that's what's even more remarkable.
I've heard people talk about, and actually I've used the analogy of the Tampa Bay Lightning, who clinched a playoff spot in the NHL going back to January with the regular season stretching into April. And so they weren't pushed. There wasn't any adversity. And that really does feel like the situation the Dodgers are in. They have now a 19-game lead in their division. They are far and away the best record in the National League, though, of course, that could change if they have a letdown. But what's motivating this team? With no adversity, how do we know they're going to be in playoff mode?
That's a great point to make there. I will say, if you look back at the last few years, I mean, the Dodgers had the best record in baseball in 2017, 105 wins. Cruising, as you said, they ran into a little adversity. And I think they lost 16 of 17 at one point there in the final month of the season. But obviously, they were able to rebound and get back to the World Series where they lost to the Astros. Last year, the Dodgers struggled out of the gate. We're 10 games below in the NL West in May, and has to take it to one game 63 just to win the division again and get into the postseason. And of course, again, they get back to the World Series, so they can do it both ways. And as you saw, the Red Sox, you know, the cream of the crop last year, most wins, were able to get there. So sometimes that's what happens. I think, though, to answer your question, the motivation for this team comes from the top with Dave Roberts, keeping them focused on each and every day, winning the day, improving on what you can improve upon. And what's good, I would say, is not necessarily the motivation. Is when you have a large lead like the Dodgers have right now in the NL West, 19 games, the largest lead in the divisions in all of baseball, you're able to tweak and fine-tune and see what relief pitchers you want to play here, who's going to cut it in the postseason. You know, they experimented with Jock Peterson at first base for a little while. They've now given up on that. They've moved Cody Bellinger back and forth. So they're able to do these little tiny tweaks and be able to figure out, which is good when you have a big cushion. Overall, though, what I've been seeing is the 3 above and beyond best teams in all of baseball, and that's the Dodgers, the Yankees, and the Astros, really starting to pull away from everybody here. And I think that question you just posed could be for all three of those teams here. But they all seem to kind of be on a collision course at some point.
Mm. And it certainly does add to the motivation if you've lost in back-to-back World Series on your own field, for sure. Michael Duarte from NBC LA with us here after hours on CBS Sports Radio. What is new with the Rams, who went to the Super Bowl last season?
There's a lot of new faces we can talk about. Obviously, Ndamukong Suh, a guy who was a big player, impact player on the defensive line with Aaron Donald last year, is gone. They lost a lot of good guys. LaMarcus Joyner, safety in the secondary, he got a big contract to go play for the Raiders. On offense, they mainly stayed together, but the two big pieces were on the offensive line. They lost center John Sullivan, and they lost left guard Roger Saffold, who went to Tennessee. So they have some new second-year players that are trying to fill in those pieces. We didn't get to see them in this last preseason game on Saturday against the Raiders. No starters played, and that's how Coach Sean McVay likes to do it. I don't think you'll see Jared Goff or Todd Gurley or Brandon Cooks or Robert Woods or any of his star players at all in the preseason. They're going to get most of their reps here in practice and stuff, and just get ready for week one. That's how they do it. But those are the new faces, and obviously everyone's eyes are going to be on Todd Gurley this year.
Sure.
Is he the same player? We've heard tendonitis in that knee. We've heard this is a lingering issue from his torn ACL back in his college days at Georgia. So they're going to be limiting his workload this year. They drafted a running back, Henderson, out of Memphis. He appears to be really good, looked really good in training camp. If he's able to get some of these carries, as well as Malcolm Brown, who's healthy and back this year, and lay the load off of Todd Gurley, maybe kind of get Todd Gurley going towards the second half of the season so he doesn't peak too early, I think that's what's best for him. But everyone's going to want to know, is this guy the same player after what we saw towards the end of the season last year with his knee?
What's it like to have Aaron Donald in camp? Bless you.
Thank you. Aaron Donald, you know, he's actually excited to be in camp, which was funny. I would think that after winning NFL Defensive Player of the Year 2 years in a row, that, you know, maybe you would not necessarily want to go back to camp, because obviously the success that he had on the field after missing camp because of his holdout. But I think, moreover, it's the camaraderie about being with your teammates, being, like I said, with a couple new players there on the defensive line. Dante Fowler Jr., a guy they acquired halfway through the season last year from the Jacksonville Jaguars, was signed this year on a one-year contract. He's now back with the team, but he wasn't in training camp in 2018. So him and Aaron Donald are getting a chance to kind of play together and gel and build a rapport. They both looked really, really good in training camp out in UC Irvine last week. So I think that's the biggest thing for Aaron Donald. And, of course, the fans getting a chance to see him and meet him and sign autographs and things like that. But I would imagine that they're going to limit the workload here in the preseason to make sure that he's fresh and healthy and kind of have the season he's had the past 2 years.
So when will we see some of the starters get work in the preseason?
I don't think you'll see any of the big names, like we just said, get any work in the preseason. Some guys they drafted, like Taylor Rapp out of Washington, D.C., a guy who was a cornerback at Washington, played a little safety. They're trying to convert more into a safety here. I think you'll see him get some reps in the preseason. But you're talking like linebackers like Clay Matthews is a new face we mentioned. Eric Weddle, a guy who's a veteran player. I don't think you'll see the same thing with Marcus Peters and Aqib Talib. I don't think you'll see those guys in the big star names on offense play it all in the preseason, maybe one series or one quarter in preseason game three, maybe. But the plan for Coach Sean McVay the whole time has been to rest those guys and let them get their reps in practice and wait for the games to actually count.
I was reading one of the columns that you posted on your Twitter account about the preseason storylines for the Rams, and you were talking about the receivers and how it's really an embarrassment of riches almost that Cooper Kupp looks good after his ACL surgery. How many options will Jared Goff have when he's lining up to throw?
Yeah, thanks for mentioning that story. And one of the things that is interesting about that is I think there's going to be some tough decisions that Coach Sean McVay and, of course, General Manager Les Snead need to make with all the embarrassment of riches at the wide receiver position. This is a team, as you mentioned, who went to the Super Bowl and lost to the Rams without arguably Jared Goff's favorite target in Cooper Kupp for the second half of the season and for the entire playoff run. Well, he's healthy now after his ACL injury last year. He looked good in training camp. Coach McVay said he's more explosive, he thinks, now than he was before the ACL injury. So he's back. a guy, JoJo Natson, who had to come on really late in the season last year after Farrell Cooper went down, who was the all-pro kick returner for them. He's emerged as a guy who can receive the ball and kind of be like that X-back guy that you have. He can take a handoff. He can run a reverse. So he's got some options there. And then, of course, you have a guy, Michael Thomas, not the guy in New Orleans, a different Mike Thomas here on the Rams. He appears to be the odd man out to me, the sixth guy in the depth chart, but even he looked good in training camp. So, like we just said, you have Brandon Cooks, you have Robert Woods, Cooper Kupp. Those are the top three weapons for Jared Goff. You have Josh Reynolds, who emerged second half of the season as a postseason and the postseason filling in for Kupp. He's now a weapon they can have. And JoJo Natson, who's going to be your return man, who they can move and use like as an X-back. So those are five pretty good weapons for Jared Goff. And I think Mike Thomas will be the odd man out at the end of the preseason.
Michael J. Duarte is how you can find him on Twitter. Covers the Dodgers, the Lakers, the Rams, all the very dramatic storylines for LA sports NBC LA. So just have about 2 minutes here, but my producer tells me that you're headed to Cuba.
Yes, I am off to Cuba, to Havana, Trinidad. I wanted to know where you go. I know you go every year for your church group, so I need the inside information. You are the expert here of the terrain, so I need you to tell me what's good, what to avoid, and all that. I'm excited for that trip coming up.
Oh, good. Well, first of all, be safe. Just make sure you're always aware of your surroundings, because Americans stand out, really stand out. But I would say, and it sounds like you're going for fun, which is good. Definitely check out Old Havana. That's where all the old architecture has been restored. And right now the country is preparing to celebrate the 500th anniversary of the city of Havana. And so they're doing a lot of work. So it's very clean in Old Havana. Lots of old Spanish architecture, churches and cathedrals that have been there for a couple hundred years that they fixed up. And so make sure you spend some time in Old Havana, because that's probably the best of what the city has to offer. But I would also suggest, and I'm sure that if you get into a taxi, you might go to Revolutionary Square and see some of the other historical landmarks. But I would also suggest asking a cab driver to take you outside Havana, so maybe to Guanabacoa, or just a couple miles outside the city to some of the villages where you can see how the rest of the country lives, because the part that most tourists see, well, that's all cleaned up and beautiful, but the parts outside, 2-3 miles outside Havana where we work, I mean, that's the part where the people are living in poverty and really in need. So make sure you see the real Havana in addition to just seeing the tourist areas.
No, that's good. We're planning on venturing out to Vinales on one of those days. I don't know if you know that. And then Varadero Beach. And hopefully we'll get past those along the way, because I know they're a couple hours out.
Yes, you definitely will. Varadero is a 2-hour bus ride. So you definitely will get to see the farmland, and you'll get to see real Cuba as opposed to just the place where the government's putting in money. All right. I'm so sorry I have to let you go. I hope you have a safe trip. Take care of yourself.
Thank you. And we'll hopefully have me back on when I get back. We'll compare notes.
Absolutely. All right, Michael. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Sammy. Have a great show and a great week.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.